You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto and he's Robbie Earle. Here are today's topics. Chelsea and Manchester United's 1-1 draw at Stamford Bridge and what the imminent arrival of Ralf Rangnick as interim manager means for United's future. Plus Man City's impressive display in the Etihad snow, taking all 3 points from West Ham. Liverpool continuing their run of form with a 4-0 win over Southampton. Arsenal finding their footing in the second half against Newcastle, and key victories for Aston Villa, Leicester and Brentford. All that coming up in today's episode. Okay, Robbie Earle, my friend, back at home, weekend off the studio duties for you.
Yeah, very nice. We are going to start,
of course, with Chelsea versus Manchester United. Finished 1-1. Wow, I had a little bit of everything in the game, Rob. What's your initial thoughts on what you saw at Stamford Bridge?
Decent result for Manchester United. Decent performance from Manchester United. I have to say, good result for Man City and Liverpool, but that's by the by. The team looked like an Oli team that's been set up with a plan where they were going to be deep, where they were going to put bodies behind the ball, where they were going to counter-attack with that pace from the wide areas. This time it was Rashford and Sancho in the wide areas. We've seen Martials, I think we've seen Lingards and people in the past. And it was a well-deserved point for Manchester United, despite not controlling the ball as much as they would like, having possession as much as you like, not maybe creating as much as they like. I thought there was a spirited performance that probably deserved the point. And when you think that their best and biggest goal scorer, Cristiano Ronaldo, started on the bench today, a couple of big decisions by Michael Carrick, one midweek when he left Bruno out in the Champions League, one today when headline obviously everywhere was that Ronaldo started on the bench. Yet he got performance, he got a point, and I thought there was things to work on from a Manchester United point of view when, to be honest, I feared for them a little bit going to Chelsea, feeling if Chelsea hit good form, this could end up 2, 3 or 4.
I think when you saw the game unfold, Rob, with the tactical plan of Michael Carrick and, as you just talked about, Rashford and Sancho kind of playing as split strikers, really, you can then understand why Ronaldo didn't start, because as part of that responsibility is to come back and help out defensively, which isn't Ronaldo's best best asset, if you like. Bruno was this kind of really, really false nine, really, really deep. So I understood it at that point. It is a brave call. And when you get a point, it's kind of justified.
Yeah.
Ronaldo could have played and did come on in the second half to play one of those wide split striker role. And it kind of worked out okay, I suppose. Though I think it was 1-0 when he came on and then Chelsea scored to make it 1-1. Not his fault, of course. But no, I thought it was spirited, you know. I don't think it changes much about what I feel for the team and for the coaching staff. We could have seen that, as you said, from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean in the next week or the 2, 3, 4 weeks that things are going to get a lot better. What I would say, Rob, and I know we'll kind of go back and forth a little bit on the two clubs. I still think in the big picture, the grand scheme of things, Man United fans deserves probably the wrong, would like a better showing. Like they want to be more competitive, Rob, more proactive. Like it should be a closer game in terms of possession. I think it was 17 shots to one
inside the box.
So, and again, I don't disagree. A fair result, spirited, great defending. But the new interim coach, Ralf Rangnick, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be him. Do you think over the short, certainly to medium term, he'll want this team with this squad to go toe-to-toe and say, you know what, you chase the ball a little bit. We're going to bring our threats the way that we do things more than we're kind of reacting to where you are and we set up to be reactive and to counter-attack. You know what I mean? Should United be better than what they were today, I guess, in the medium term?
I think so, because I still think if we go back to our opening transfer deadline show and our first early predictions, we talked of Manchester United being one of four teams who can win the title. And I don't think we should jump away from that because things haven't started well. The potential within this group, players being organised, players playing near the top of their game, it's happening in the other sides, then Manchester United can. And you're right. You know, Manchester United shouldn't feel that they have to be Wolves, that they have to be Everton. They have to be a team that plays one of the big two or three and we have to just sit back and not have possession. Manchester United have to be a team that go, okay, these are the big days. It's us v you. Let's go for it. Like we saw a brilliant game early in the season, Manchester City-Liverpool, where both teams wanted the ball, where both teams hurt each other and both teams went toe-to-toe on level footing.
Right.
I think it's that Manchester United need to get back to level footing of the other three best teams in the league, because at the moment, they're a little step below. They're in the group that are below, that if the big three have big days, they'll beat you.
Mm. We'll jump back to Man United, Rob, and we talk about the manager and coach today and the future manager. But let's just jump to Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think Thomas Tuchel, love the way he speaks, by the way, because it's always honest. It's always kind of, you know, end up sort of nodding your head. I think he realised today he had no regrets about how he picked the side and how they play. But I think just reading between the lines a little bit, they weren't at their best today, Rob, were they?
No.
Or is it down a credit to United and how they set up? I thought Chelsea were a little surprised, quite honestly, at the start of how United were, because it was kind of different. They tried to force the wing-backs to stay back, Rob, which they didn't. You know, and Reece James went forward. Alonso came back into like a pseudo back four. Mm-hmm. Don't need to get into to too much detail of all that stuff. They didn't really show that dynamic, thrusting, like creative Chelsea that we've seen over recent matches.
No. But what they did do, Rob, and I suppose, and we do, we will instantly make contrast between two, is they still showed that a team structure, that team organisation, even when you don't play well, can get you something in games.
Yeah.
Manchester United, when they don't have a structure, lose 2, 3 or 4. Chelsea today, their structure was right. I think I said on the podcast the other day, I read somewhere that he's not been in charge of the football club 12 months yet, Rob.
No.
Yet. There's an ingrained understanding of what this team's about. Now, they didn't play well today, and that's the reason that they didn't win the game. Created more chances. Hudson-Odoi could change the outlook of the game if he takes his chance. Timo Werner, Rob, for me, I'm starting to get the point where I'm not sure. I'm starting to be not sure. The team looks less threatening when he plays in that central role. It doesn't look to me like he's going to score a goal. I'm going to be surprised if he does, and that's a bit of a worry for a centre-forward. And they weren't as creative as they have been in the attacking third. Whether Chilwell not playing and just that balance on either side. You know, Alonso came in for his first game for a while and getting up to speed. Loftus-Cheek didn't have as big an influence maybe as you'd like to see. And they never quite... I just never thought they quite got it going, but... Mm. They probably got the penalty deservedly out of possession. They probably deserved the point out of the way they played and their setup, but not at their best, where we've seen them in recent weeks, but happy enough to take a point. And you're right, Thomas Tuchel doesn't kid us as the viewing public. I don't think would kid his own team. I think he's one of them managers who you kind of might not like all what he says, but he's pretty honest and pretty truthful and pretty to the point.
Jorginho's error, Robbie Earl. What should he have done differently?
I thought he could have, as the ball's coming, he's trying to like do that one control on his foot and bring it down and look to play. I thought he could have looked to kind of, you know, you sometimes turn away with the ball, Rob, as you take it and turn away from the attackers who are coming at you. A, that gives you a little bit of protection on the ball if somebody's coming, and B, it gives you enough. Bigger margin for error. If your touch isn't good, as long as it's going back towards the keeper and you can get there first, the others, the two attacking players, Rashford and Sancho, are never going to catch you up. I thought he backed his ability, and maybe if I had his ability, I might have done the same. But I would have been thinking, I've got to take this back towards my goal, and if I need to, use my goalie, protect its safety.
I mean, could he have just like gone the safest route and just headed the thing back.
Getting back into the box.
I think he was facing awkward. Like, yeah. He might have been not facing the right way, a little bit awkward. Mm. I mean, the ball kind of does come really quick in that situation. I've been back in that situation actually many times. I used to stay back sometimes for corners. I don't know. I mean, it's just a hard... And we actually did break down. There was a couple of Chelsea players, and this happens a lot, actually, where they were goal side of those two runners, Sancho and Rashford, but just thought he would deal with it back there.
Yeah, because he's got caught out. Which is going to happen. It's an individual area. You can't really legislate for that. And probably 9 times out of 10, he brings it down and picks out a pass or, you know, keeps possession. He didn't. And fair play to Jadon Sancho just on that one, Rob.
He's
you know, found a little bit of life and had the confidence. And he went a long way, had a lot to think of. And I'm wondering, one time, is he going to pass it? But he believed in himself, sent a little dummy into Mendy and found the back of the net. And fair play to him, you know, 2-2 to give United the lead.
Let's just jump back to the coaching situation at Man United, Rob. And just a point I want to ask you about, because me and Tim kind of went back and forth a little bit this weekend. And that, you know, like what Ranieri can do and how long it's going to take him to improve the team. Now, I think Tim's point was, well, just think of Liverpool. New manager came in, took a long time to kind of get the team to a point where they started winning stuff. And I came back to say, well, yes, I agree with that. But what about, and this is why it's interesting now, Thomas Tuchel. He came to a club, Rob. Mm. And I think I saw a pundit in the UK on radio say, all this kind of managers need time is a load of baloney. Thomas Tuchel's blown that out of the water. You're a sensible, smart, clever coach. You can go into the club, you can reorganize, restructure, and you're at it straight away. I tend to think that's more possible with this United squad, given the players. If the squad isn't up to it, like maybe like Conte at Spurs, it takes longer. But based on the players he has in the squad, is it more like Chelsea possibilities for a new coach effect or more like a Spurs or a Liverpool for you?
I think it's more like Chelsea. I'd agree, though. I think the difference between the two is the quality of the player you're going in and the basis of the squad that you got, the balance sometimes of the squad that you got. But I think we all, listen, can back of a cigarette packet write down a Manchester United team that we feel on a good day playing well could win against anybody in the league because they got those kind of players. Now, if Ranić comes in with, and all the things we've read, and we'll talk about him in a little bit more detail, but all the things you read in terms of philosophy, his coaching style, the way he works, what he wants to drill into players, makes me think that with that structure added to the quality that's in the group, this could happen a little bit quicker than we think. This could start to look a lot better, a lot quicker than we think. And that's one of the reasons, Rob, why I was for it's Ollie's time's up. He's gone so far because he's had 3 years of trying to put that structure in place with quality players and it's not worked. I'd just like to see, and now we'll know, this guy, at this stage, he's got 6 months between now and the summer. I think by the end of the season, we will see a different looking Manchester United. I'm not going to say that by any means they're going to win the league, but I think we'll get a more competitive, more understanding Manchester United of what they're trying to do and how they're trying to do it in games.
I think in our last podcast, Rob, I think we kind of went through a few names that were up for it for Man United and we didn't know at that point. Mm. Maybe the next day it became apparent it's going to be Ralph Rangnick. Mm. And of course, you know, we know a little bit about him and what he's done. But of course, you start doing a lot of digging around and you start looking at stuff and you start reading stuff, you start listening to stuff and taking a deeper dive. Given that and given what we know about the guy and given what we know about the football club and where it has been under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I'm like, this is kind of ideal. This is an ideal person right now, twofold, in two ways. Immediate short term, coaching the team to be better, coaching the team to play as a team to be better. And then longer term, coaching the club to be better, Robbie Earl. And that bit is as exciting as anything, that they might have somebody here that has built clubs from nothing to top end of the Bundesliga and hired coaches and mentored coaches and taught coaches. I think so a 6 month contract as a coach and then 2 year consultancy deal, I believe. Give me your take on what you feel about that and what you hope might happen in the future with him.
I actually think the two-year consultancy is more important than the 6 months what we're getting. For a long time, Rob, and I was thinking about it this morning as I was thinking about a podcast, this is one of the first grown-up adult decisions Manchester United have made.
Yeah.
There's no fanfare. There's no Messiah. There's no Manchester United NDA. There's no buzzwords that everybody's going to jump onto. It's a hard-nosed, joined-up, forward-thinking decision by a man who will help the team in the short term, but wholesale change the club, possibly, Rob, in the long term. We'll start to build a structure. We'll start to work with whoever comes in. We'll start to put scouting network in place, a coaching manager in place, make sure the academy is aligned to the first team and the under-23s and all things. Make sure people are going out on loan to the right places so when they come back, they can... All those things that weren't happening at this great, great football club can start to happen because they've made one adult, grown-up appointment.
Let me just chuck this in. And it is something that Danny Higginbottom, as a conversation with him today, saw him here, did a game commentary today.
Yeah.
He talked about the hierarchy of Man United, Rob, don't want to give up the power. I'll throw it back to you. Mm. Man United hierarchy have given him a two-year consultancy. What does that mean, by the way? I'll tell you what it means, in my opinion. It means that we'll listen to what you think about what we should do, but you're consulting. You're not given the power to go and do that. That's what worries me, Rob. I hope, right, that between now and the end of the season or the next 6 months, the team looks better. There's a good reaction from the team. And the club enjoys what he's talked about, what he brings, his ideas about developing the club. Yeah. And say to him at the end of the 6 months, you know what? You know, when they finish in the top four, whatever, we want you to be director of football of this club. We want you to be the expert of this club and everything else. Like you just said, Rob, the youth, the scouting network, the youth department, the recruitment side of things, the structure, the tactical kind of blueprint for the club, like you see in the noisy neighbours of Manchester City. But the consultancy thing worries me that the Edward Woods and the Graham Arnolds, whoever it is, are gonna use him as a consultant. Not enough for me, Rob. Is that a bit wishy-washy?
Listen, job title, I don't know. Mentality. This is how I'd put it, Rob. The Glazer family, who own the business, continue to get horrendous stick more often than not, quite rightly, because of the way they run the football club. Edward Wood continues to get unbelievable stick for the way he runs the football club. If they find a guy who can take some of that away from him, can make a successful football club, I don't care what he's called. If he's called Ralph Rangnick, my best mate, Ralph Rangnick, my buddy, I don't care what his title is. As long as he's in place doing the job, titles, who cares? EVP, supporting director. If he's a sporting director in name, but he hasn't got the title, but he's running the football side of the business, because if he starts to be successful, Rob, if we start to see Manchester United take the kind of steps they need to take to get back, they ain't letting him go anywhere. They'll give him whatever title he wants. He can be king of Manchester by all accounts if he starts to move him. That's where I'm less worried. I think if he starts to be successful... This football club haven't got enough good football brains around them to be thinking, let's push this guy at the side.
We'll keep talking, Rob, about him as he goes forward. Yeah, and Rebecca made a good point today. We're chatting with Rebecca about it. She said, well, you know, what if he stays for 6 months with his philosophy and then Pochettino comes in with a different philosophy? You know, let's figure that out as it goes along. I tend to hope for the club that he improves the team immediately and his vision for how the club should be set up is appreciated by those to say, you know what? You're going to be our director of football, Ed Woodward or Graham Arnold, your director of commercial, and Ralph Rangnick is going to be the expert on the football side to try and bring some continuity to the team.
I think we all as neutrals, Rob, want a good Manchester United.
Of course
it's better
do.
For the league, it's better for us as broadcasters, it's better for English football that there's a good Manchester United, and that's what we want. Just before we move on, and I don't want to get ahead of things, because I just felt... In what was a tumultuous week for Manchester United, if you think from Ollie's sort of sacking to everything else that's gone on, was he leaving? His goodbye to the fans and the players. Michael Carrick being given the job. I just thought in a week of Champions League football where they needed to win a game, big game against Chelsea, where everyone was saying they've got no chance. I just want a little nod of the hat to Michael Carrick. a young coach who's been thrown in at one of the biggest clubs in the world with a huge spotlight on him, with lots of pressure, everybody having an opinion of who should be taking the job, who should be playing in Manchester United's team, what the best 11 are, why Sancho isn't playing, why Van der Beek's not been playing, where should Pogba be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This fella's gone in very quietly, as he does, very understated, gone about his business, got the result in Villarreal, dropping Bruno, was a big call, comes to Chelsea, sets his team up. Loved his interview after the game, Rob, where he talked about his front three taking the game central, working in those wide areas, having a plan. McTominay taking Hudson-Odoi when he wanted not to disrupt the back line. Just, you know, obviously planned, worked, got his result in the end. Would have wanted more possession, of course, as a player himself wants the ball. But I just thought it shouldn't have gone unnoticed. It's been a tough week, and it could have been a difficult week. And this week could look very different for Ralf Rangnick coming in, struggling in the Champions League, not through, just got hammered by Chelsea, and he's got to pick everybody up. So I just thought Michael Carrick deserves my underappreciated performer of the week for sort of carrying Manchester United to a really difficult week and handing on, if it looks like Thursday, Ralf Rangnick's going to get his first game against Arsenal, handing on a decent and a team in better fettle than certainly it was a week ago.
Lovely shout. Bit of love for Michael Carrick, underappreciated manager. Don't get those too often. So very good shout, mate.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Let's move it on. Spent a long time there on Man United. To the other team, Manchester City against West Ham United. Really, really great looking matchup at the top of the Premier League. West Ham, of course, in great form. The snow was amazing. was an influence in the game. Man City won the game, Robbie Earl, 2-1. Goals from Ilkay Gundogan, back on the goals from midfield for him. And Fernandinho, a substitute in the second half. A late goal, a really nice goal from Mauro Lanzini. But I just, again, it added to my admiration of this Man City side, because I'll be honest with you, before the game started, I see the snow coming down and the pitch getting covered with snow. And I'm like, this kind of should help West Ham in terms of the ball being a little bit slow, you know, kind of cold, snowing. They can make it a little scrappy, but it wasn't the case. Man City's football, like, it's so automatic now that they, whatever's going on around them or underneath them or on the weather or the pitch or whatever, they just have their patterns. They all know what they're doing. Yeah, there was rotation. Jesus started wide. Mahrez started as a false nine. They switched over again in the game. I just thought it was more impressive Man City to, like, forget about the conditions. We'll play our football and we'll find ways to win. I thought they were very, very good again.
Biggest criticism for City was they didn't bring out an orange ball. I just thought it was orange ball in the snow. That might have given West Ham a chance. But you're right. He looked at the game and thought, well, you know, it's a West Ham team who are well set up. Definitely based with great counter-attack, blessed with the kind of players. West Ham went a little bit different with the setup, put Masuaku and next to on the left-hand side.
Yeah, midfielder.
With Rice in Suchek central. Benrahma on one side underneath Mikel and Antonio. So it was a little bit different, but as ever, you were right. I loved your line. I thought it was a lovely line that they can almost play blindfolded football, because it is very much like, as you get the ball, it's almost like there's a trained pattern of play that we know where this next one, we know where this next one, and they just work those things. And I've got to be honest, Rob, I was close. Michael Carrick had a great week. I was close to giving Pat my underappreciated performer of the week, only because we take for granted what they do and how they do it.
We talked about it, Rob. We had our opening chat on the broadcast was that same topic. I think we spend too much time together. I said to Rebecca, I said, you know, like, watching them again against PSG, like, then I've played some good stuff. So we had that conversation that you're talking about today. I think you're right. It's like, it's so, like, the three wins, three different lineups.
Yeah.
Still the same football. And for the Gundogan goal, Robert.
Oh yeah.
Players like wanting to tap the ball. They all know what they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Wide cross tap ins. But no, not to interrupt you, mate. Sorry.
Yeah,
about that.
It's a good point.
I appreciate the point.
Yeah, it's just, you know, and as you show quite nicely, our West Ham, we're working with those four quite narrow, centrally, good distances between. So what does City do? Work it one side, bang it out to the other side to Mahrez, who's free because everybody's gone narrow. He has time to go in there. And the four midfield players in there, that was reminiscent of last season. That was reminiscent of Gundogan getting his 13-goal Premier League goals last season. And the biggest compliment I can give Pep, if after any Manchester City game, if we're not mentioning strikers and false nines, Pep, you've had a good day. Because the football world wants to say, oh, they can't win it this year without a striker. And he's going to show us that, listen, if he doesn't, he's going to go close winning it. And I read something a little bit ominous today, Rob. So it was this weekend last season that they started their 28-game unbeaten run, 21 victories in those games, which pretty much wrapped them up the title.
Yeah.
I think they're 5 straight wins now, 5 on the bounce, all comps, just a gain. Listen, this is without Foden, this is without Grealish, this is without KDB. I mean, 3 of your creative, you'd say in most teams, you know, got to start players. And he's getting performances out of your Sterlings, and he's getting Gundogan goals. He's getting midfield goals out of Rodri and Fernandinho. So, however they need to do it, they're finding a way to get the goals.
West Ham United, Robbie, will have lost 2 on a spin. Changed it around today. Thought the idea was great. I did the lineup for him, like, oh. This is kind of different. What are they going to do? They're 3 at the back. He went with a 4-4-1-1.
Yeah.
And for a period of time, it worked okay with a narrow midfield. Nothing to worry about West Ham, Rob, in terms of what we're seeing over the last couple of matches, like where they hope to be this season. What are you thinking?
No, I'm still good with it. And listen, you've got to go to Manchester City and try something. Because if you don't, you're going to get there. You're going to go beat. And for a while, it was slowing City down. It wasn't making it easy for certain peers. Till the goal goes in. Once the goal goes in, then it changes everything a little bit. But they had a couple of chances. Remember, Mikel Antonio gets wide and drags the ball into Benrahma, who made a bad touch. So they did have the 1 or 2 chances, and they get the goal in the end through for now. So nothing major to worry about. Again, off European week, the West Ham continue to play well, give a good count of themselves. So disappointing that Bonner's out for the season, because he just building up a good relationship with Kurt Zouma. You know, all those little rhythms and relationships. Not that Craig Dawson doesn't do an admirable job, but just felt there was a little bit of continuity starting at the back. Mm. So a little bit disappointing for West Ham on that one. But no, 2 defeats. Listen, West Ham are doing, they're a bit like the Brighton, who we'll talk about a little bit later. Absolutely nothing but credit for the manager and the group of players.
Yeah, still sitting 4th place, Robbie, after 13 matches on goal difference. So fair play to them. Let's move on to the other team in terms of the top 3 at the moment. We haven't talked about so far. Liverpool played Saturday. I watched this game, Rob, against Southampton. You know, two managers that did their coaching licenses together, highly, highly respected in German football. 4-0 to Liverpool. Wow. I mean, as grooved and as skillful and incisive and punishing as they've been for a while, Rob, with the goals that they scored and another performance in Liverpool, it's like, wow. Going forward, they are the team to watch right now.
4 goals at home, no Mo Salah involved. 10 goals in the week across 3 games, 2 4-0s and a 2-0. So non-conceded. I think it was 20 shots in the game, Rob. I mean, in all honesty, after the, 113 seconds it took Jota to score the goal, pretty much over. They've got a front 3, all, I think, the top 3, or there's a top 3 or 4 scorers in the league.
Yep.
In Salah, Jota, Mane, you look at Southampton with Broja and Adams and Armstrong, just a completely different league of what you've got at the top end of your pitch. As well as playing well and bringing the energy. I thought they were scintillating at times. Jota could easily have had his hat-trick and enough chances. And the one I want to focus on, Rob, is Thiago, who came into this team. We talked about him. We got excited about him early on the season. And injuries didn't quite pick the speed of the Premier League up. And a little bit of, I haven't quite seen the best of him. he scored a brilliant goal midweek. The volley that, you know, 6 inches off the ground, swerves in more times you see it, the better. Scores a beauty off his left foot, though, gets slightly flattened, but the control. And he has, Rob, brought that other dimension that we talked about for Liverpool. That they've not got a box runner. They've got a guy now who can see that pass, and he can break lines with his passing. He can see the runs. He's ahead of the game. He's got the no-look pass on. He can put things around the corner as those strikers are on the way. If they can keep him fit, Rob, and in form next to Hendo and Fabinho, that's a very, very balanced midfield behind a front three and four when you put Firmino in there that could fire them to a title.
Yeah, I still think there's a couple of moments where he just risked the ball a little bit.
Yeah,
I still
he was think, a loose one, yeah. He got a couple of times. A couple square, yeah. Early
so
on
he's not far off his best, but I think, you know, to get to the point where you're saying where you want him in the team every week and he's going to be a part of a title challenge inside. Mm. I don't think he's quite there yet, but yeah, like you, I've seen him from when he was a super young kid come through at Barcelona. And it was impressive again. And I'll mention him one more time, just Diogo Jota, Rob. I just think that he's going to be a star for this club for many years to come. Another 2 goals, the first 2 goals within 32 minutes from Jota. He's a scorer, Rob. He's a scorer.
Yeah.
Tap-ins. You know, we didn't And Firmino is his own way, a brilliant, brilliant footballer. He's been a brilliant player for Liverpool. But we never saw Firmino consistently tap in goals and get those numbers up. He's got, I think it's now Jota, he's got 7 Premier League goals in 12 appearances. Mm. That's pretty good. I mean, that's a really good strike rate. Not as good as Mo Salah right now.
Yeah, that's what Firmino will get in a season generally, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the kind of it. So I think everybody's got to be excited about that. A couple of moments defensively, again, a couple of moments where it's like, wow, they could concede here. They didn't, but, you know, for the most part, again, I thought about today when I'm looking Man City, you know, playing through the snow, and I mean they were great, but I think when the snow was coming down in Liverpool, thinking, oh, this is going to be fun. Like we've got our job done. Let's see how City do and Chelsea do as well. Good result for them again for Chelsea United. I just thought Liverpool were imperious. They're in super fettle right now and very comfortable victory for them. Very comfortable.
Yeah. Couple of just other mentions as well on the I thought Canute getting another start is important. The more they can get him bedded into Premier League games and playing, you know, knowing when it matters. And I thought Andrew Robertson was an important one. Obviously, there's been a bit of talk about Tsimikas and has he quite been on form? You know, the Scottish captain, one or two people. I think he was asked this week about, you know, whether Tsimikas was pushing Robertson for a place in the starting lineup. And I think Klopp looked at a couple of press people as if, like, really? You know, that your memories are that short. And I just thought he put in a really good performance, helped him the goal, was back to, you know, creating things in the last third, defending properly, aggressive with his tackling. A bit like Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, everybody's going to have a little dip. It's how you come out of those dips and get back to your standards. And he looked like he was back to in, enjoying his football down that left-hand side.
Let's move on to another game, Rob, involving a team that we know there's tons of fans in America and all over the world. Mm-hmm. It's Arsenal Football Club, and a new and improved Arsenal for this season, Rob, under Mikel Arteta. The new signings, the new players are starting to gel. Yeah. They're starting to find some rhythm, some consistency. Newcastle at home was obviously very winnable. I thought Newcastle United, and they did win the game. And just go through the facts and figures first. 2-0 to Arsenal Football Club. The two 20-year-olds got the goal. Bukayo Saka in the 56th minute. And then Gabriel Martinelli in the 66th minute. Newcastle, I thought, for the first half an hour, had good shape. Mm-hmm. Kind of a 4-4-2, wasn't it? With Joelinton just in behind Callum Wilson. Really tight together. Eddie Howe was pleased with the way that they started the first 30 minutes. And I agree with him. They sort of started to creak just before half time. Yeah. And they couldn't really live with Arsenal in the second half. Arsenal could have been tricky this one, Rob, but they look confident now. And it looks like the rhythm and the synergy and the way that they're used to playing with each other is starting to pay off, and they can win games fairly comfortably.
Yeah, and Mikel Arteta said something to the point after where he was a little disappointed having got the 2 goals that they didn't go to 3 or 4, they didn't control the game a little bit more. And I was thinking, wow, Eddie Howe would love to be in a position where his winning game can talk about wanting it a little bit more, because the contrast between the two teams is huge now. And I was thinking, remember the first three games of the season, Arsenal lost all three, no points, and I think see something like nine
crisis.
Goals.
It was a crisis, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Newcastle got 1 point from their three, but you know, you're thinking, well, this Newcastle's a slow start. Look at Arsenal now, 17 points, Rob, from 13 games. Newcastle, well, are they six?
Six points, yeah.
6 points from 13 games. I mean, so that's 5 points into the first three games of the season. Eddie Howe's got it on, Rob. And while I agree there was encouragement in the first half, the penalty, I wasn't so sure, to be honest. I can see why they go down and ask a question, but I can see why the referee also doesn't give it.
Yep.
But this team are going to have to start turning half-decent performances into wins, because if that doesn't happen soon, we're going to be in a problem position. They've got Norwich midweek and Burnley both at home next weekend.
Massive.
Two huge games, Rob. They need to come out with, I would say, a minimum four, but I'm talking 6 points, really. 6 points from those games. If they lose one of those games and get in a draw, let's say, in the other, we are in it, my friend.
Yeah,
we are in it.
I know. And the games they got coming up after that, I haven't got the list, but it's crazy difficult. After these next two, it's crazy difficult. So you could be in the situation on Boxing Day at Christmas, bottom of the league table, and we know from there, history says, what is it, two? Like, is it two teams? Like
West Brom and Sunderland or somebody, was it?
This ever escaped from being bottom at Christmas. So you're absolutely right. I mean, unthinkable, really, when you think about the ownership. That being said, Rob, the owners will find new players in January. January 1st.
Yeah.
January 1st, they got to add players. And they're going to overpay for players.
Mm.
That's got to be okay. Overpay.
Yeah. Be 250 million, are they talking? 250 million war chest? I think they're talking.
I mean, I think they'll deal with the financial fair play a later time.
Yeah.
It's emergency.
Let's just stay up first.
Let's just stay up. So I think they've got to do that. Those deals early. Got to start now. Start talking. So on January 1st or close to it, they can bring some new talent in, which will help the team surely improve their.
Do we know who will be targeting that, Rob? Because it's a bit like the Manchester United, isn't it? It's like, okay, Eddie's. You know, we believe all hands on deck on the coaching. I saw a couple of clips of him last weekend on the training ground, which is where he works best and working with players. But you're then thinking, is it Mandy Staveley who's heading up like the player recruitment? You know, who's going to get the players in? That worries me a little bit, I've got to be honest. That worries me if I'm Newcastle.
Well, I mean, I think right now, I think I'm right in saying, and we had David Ornstein, our insider, on our show today. And basically, there's no CEO. There's no director of football. They've just appointed a head coach. Amanda Staveley is kind of running all that kind of stuff. So even though we're saying they got tons of money to spend, the staff isn't in place really to have an organized approach about this. James Tarkowski at Burnley, Jesse Lingard, Divock Origi, players that have real quality. And of course, Tarkowski's playing, but Origi and Lingard, there's got to be others around the Premier League, some of the bigger clubs, but you get them. Give them a ton of money. You got to give more money than they might expect to get. And they would let them go, and Newcastle would improve on the back of that. And that's just off the top of my head, just of good players. Because it's not going to be like amazing. You're not going to get amazing players right now, relegation. But you will get those that want to play. They're really talented, and they want more money.
They may feel they're part of something growing up in Newcastle, because it is going to be a big future. But they've got an interesting time coming up at Newcastle. As we talk about these next two games, we'll look at those midweek and next week. Norwich and Burnley almost become must win. Just before we move on, I've got to give him a mention out to my mate now, my best mate, Aaron Ramsdale. Keep seeing week in, week out now, my friend, coming up with huge moments. Brilliant. The John Joe Shelby save is up there nearly with his Madison one, and then he takes one later low against Shelby as well. You know, just got to say, you know, fair play to him, because he's known of playing well, bought a bit of confidence, and proving people, including me, wrong, because I wasn't sure that was a good buy. I wasn't sure that he was a massive upgrade on Bert Leno. But I've got to tell you, you know, fair play to him and Mikel Arteta.
Can I give a final fair play? Fair play to Bukayo Saka, Rob. Had a big game. Was the main threat in the first half. Of course, he does amazingly well for his goal in the second half. And a player that struggled a little bit after the Euros and the summer to kind of hit that form again. And I thought he was by far, instead of Odegaard and Smith Rowe and Aubameyang, he was the main man for them, and they need that. Martinelli came and took his goal really well, by the way. Difficult to control that volley.
Yeah, lovely finish.
From the ball from Tomiyasu. So good play, and fair play to Saka as well. A really good match for him.
He just got injured as well, Saka, didn't he? I think he's got a scan tomorrow, so we're hoping that, that's fine. That's nothing too bad. But yeah, you're right. He's those young players at times driving Arsenal as they continue on a decent bit of form.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Let's move it on to the KP, Leicester versus Watford. Ranieri going back to Leicester for the first time and quite rightly got a brilliant ovation. It was really quite emotional to see him back there with the team that he, mission impossible, winning the Premier League back in 2016. But it was an important game for both these teams. Leicester got the goals. No surprise, Jamie Vardy is involved in those as well. Important win for Leicester, this one, Rob, with all that was going on.
Well, what was Leicester then? I mean, they were right in the bottom half of the table, Leicester City. Mm-hmm. And talk about Brendan Rodgers for maybe Manchester United. And there was the little bit of talk about him under actually more pressure than you might expect at Leicester City, by the way. I heard this morning or yesterday, this is not really anywhere near acceptable for Leicester, which I thought was a little bit harsh given what he's done. And this is his first real bad run, if you like. So really important for them, important for some of their important players to start scoring goals again. And I tell you, I'm going to chuck in, Rob. I'm going to chuck in my underappreciated performer. And I kind of decided on this, going through some of the highlights that we do, and we kind of revisit all the games over the weekend. Yeah. Jamie Vardy. I couldn't have more respect for a player in the Premier League. And I know that part of the question is the call to arms or the call of action, whatever we call it on our shows, was which Premier League player are you most thankful for? I think mine might be Jamie Vardy. I mean, and it's not just his incredibly consistent goal scoring and the types of goals that he scores, which are very similar and on display again in this game of two goals, and the run through and the flick over the top and the flicked header. It's just his attitude to the game and the joy on his face when he scores a goal. And by the way, when somebody plays a ball over the top that's not really any good and it runs out of play, he's like that. He's clapping. He's clapping anything positive, anybody trying to do the right thing. I just couldn't be more. I'm just so if I ever saw him, I'd you're such a flipping an example of an older player coming into the game that loves his game. I'm sure he's made a flipping tons of money in the match, in the sport. He scored tons of goals, but just his joy to play. And if I was a Leicester City fan, I'd be clapping him every week. This guy is an example of a seasoned pro that's done it at all levels and continues to be as hungry as a flipping 20-year-old kid coming into the team that's running his heart out on his debut. So I'm giving my underappreciated performance to Jamie Vardy because he is underappreciated in terms of his also his production. But also just his general demeanour, given he's 30, whatever he is, years of age. Brilliant. So I just give a shout-out to Jamie Vardy, legend.
Yes, good shout, mate. Absolutely good shout. Amongst all these teams, wherever, their goal scorer is, he's always in there fighting for the goal, the golden boot. He's always on the shoulder. And you say, I saw his first goal. I saw a clip from behind the goal. And he's run off the back of the shoulders, what we know and expect. But any young striker, just take a look at his body as the ball and the goal kick come out. He takes a big breath to relax his body.
He has a little look up as well.
He looks up early to see the keeper, and then he relaxes to say, right, I now just have to get it over the goalie and then towards the goal. He doesn't hit it too hard where it's going to go over the top. He doesn't hit it too low where it's going to go in the keeper. He realises, I just have to miss the goalkeeper and put it in. And those little bits are the difference. Those are the bits that Timo Werner we don't see. Timo Werner misses that same chance. So either smashes the goalkeeper or he goes over the top. Because he doesn't relax and prepare his body in the way that Vardy does. And for all his speed and tenacity, Jamie Vardy's one of the best at just in that last moment, relaxing himself and finding the right contact to hit the goal. And it's a great shout, appreciate it, because he's one of them that probably won't ever win, well, apart from the year they won the title, get any player of the year awards, yeah. But certainly, yeah, right up there with the appreciated players in the Premier League.
All right, my friend, let's go on to, a story that's getting stronger and stronger. Aston Villa go to Crystal Palace, who've been in very good form. Two amazing players that we've both had the pleasure, I think, Stephen Gerrard,
when he was just two of the best, mate.
And now managers of teams in the Premier League, which is so brilliant to watch. Is something special happening at Aston Villa, or is this a typical manager bump that might be tough to maintain?
A special player who's going along the lines to become a special manager is starting his Premier League career, and that's the exciting thing. In all the things that you see, read, hear, so we know about the puddings that are no longer there, the nutrition, the ketchup, the mayonnaise. We've heard about the WhatsApp groups, the Instagram groups, where he's sending information on a more modern, current basis than maybe managers in the past. You can imagine him having meetings with players or units individually, talking about what he wants, what are their standards, or it just smacks of everything about Stephen Gerrard smacks of a top class manager. Everything about the way he stands on the side, the way he talks with his coaching staff, the way he gets on at players when he needs to, the smiles with the McGinns when they've scored, and the Tyrone Mings he's captain. I think we're Stephen Gerrard is on course to becoming a very, very good top-class manager.
I know. We totally go over X sometimes, me and you, and that's okay. That's all good. We're a little bit knee-jerk.
That's fine, my friend.
But I agree. I just like listening to talk. I like him on the sideline. There's enough fired-up action. There's enough composedness in his interviews. Yeah. I think the team right now is enjoying him being the manager. And by the way, how do you even set up a flipping Instagram group? I wouldn't even know how to do that.
I don't know
why I'm asking you, the most untech person in the world. But
excuse me. It's Thanksgiving weekend. Can we please give thanks?
Sorry, mate. I'm sorry, mate. Yeah. But I agree. And we actually had a conversation on air about it in the Rebecca Lowe's Lowdown show. Same kind of thing towards Stephen Gerrard, where she talked about the Instagram group and everything else that he's doing, and the ketchup and the puddings. We had a laugh about it. I'd never be able to play for him. I love my puddings and treacle sponge and custard, and I think that's all gone in the training ground. So it's one of them now where I want to see him. I want to see him play during the week. Yeah. I want to watch him really closely. Mm. It's hard for us sometimes to get a real close take on all these teams because we're doing so many games in the same kind of weekend. But brilliant story, Stephen Gerrard. Really good. Little hiccup for Palace though.
Just on that, and I said, because I kind of, like you say, because of the Stephen Gerrard effect, I'm pretty much drawn to Villa. So what he did this weekend, Rob, is where he played three tight strike midfield players. So he played McGinn, Nakamba and Ramsey, very narrow as a three. Right. And they kind of worked off each other.
Like a triangle.
Yeah. And when one pressed, the other went, they went in behind. They won so many balls in that thing, just 50-50. Do you know, as the ball's coming into somebody and you nick it in front of him and go and play from there. Right. He did that so many, which is very Stephen Gerrard in midfield. If he can't tell you about playing midfield, no one can. It was just little tactics, and you've got Leon Bailey in the team. Ashley Young, I think, started this one with Watkins up front. So it was a little different look, and he's getting quality in the team. And he supposedly dropped or rested, however you want to look at it. Danny Ings said he's got a bit of a knock and he wants to get him 100% fit, which, whether rightly or wrongly, that's how he managed that situation. And there's just these little things going on there. I'm watching and I'm taking interest. And as you say, listen, because he was a great player and somebody we've known in the game, you're kind of rooting for him. But I'm intrigued with his development of the Premier League. And I'm also intrigued in development when a couple of losses come, Rob, because they're going to come. And what kind of manager is he then? And how does he talk to his players? And how does he talk to the media? And how, you know, what sort of face? Because he's got a very poker face when he gets in front of the media. Can he keep that on when there's a little bit of pressure on?
Talking about managers and development, let's talk about Rafael Benitez, Robbie Earl. Everton Football Club right now are in 14th position, 15 points at the moment, 6 points above the relegation zone. A chance to get some points on the board against Brentford that have been struggling a little bit. I think four losses in the last five going into this match. They lose the game Everton away at Brentford 1-0. They face a massive, massive Merseyside derby on Wednesday, 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. On NBCSN, what are we to think of Everton right now?
Well, what we think of Everton is what I first thought when Rafa got the job, and I was one of those saying he's up against it, not least because he was an ex-Liverpool manager, but it, you know, it's a team that he's got to show that the Blues mean more than the Reds to him now. So going into a Merseyside derby of all games, when this man needs a result, by the way, no wins in the last seven, as you say, dropping down the league. You know, I think it was the 11th or 12th they finished last season and under Ancelotti, and that was seen as like, you know, we've got to get back to being close to that top six and knocking on the door. A hefty defeat against Liverpool, my friend, could turn us going into record-breaking territory of another manager looking at not being an injury. I'm not sure they're that knee-jerk, the Everton ownership group, and that they would, but a big defeat, Rob, won't do his position any good whatsoever. A lot of that, we can keep talking about Dominic Calvert-Lewin not being at the being fit to the football club, and I totally get that, and I totally get that he's a big part of how they play in terms of getting the ball up to him, building from there. But surely they can't just be reliant on the one player. That's the only thing that's making them tick. That, you know, the standards we saw early on with the team that seems very Everton now, you know, first four or five games they go flying, they play some good football, and then do players drop to a level that becomes their norm? I'm not sure if that's where Rafa's at, but Rafa's usually great at setting a team up with a plan to nullify the opposition and maybe on the counter-attack with a Rondon or a Demarai Gray, who obviously was injured at the weekend, can get them a goal. He's going to have to pull out a plan for this one against Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, I just remember back, and Ronald Koeman did get fired, I think, mid-season, Rob, when Everton started to slide yeah. towards a relegation zone, which they kind of are right now. I mean, again, I think that would be very premature. I think that the truth is, I know they spent a lot of money on players over recent seasons, Mashiri, the majority owner. I just don't think it's a very good squad. So you miss a couple of your really important players, Doucouré and Dominic Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah. Yeah,
and yeah, you still should have enough not to lose to Brentford. But I think you're just looking at another mid-table type of Everton. And I know it's frustrating for the Everton fans. I know they want to be part of an exciting period, like this excitement at Aston Villa. You know, there's excitement at West Ham United. There's no reason why it shouldn't be some exciting for Everton Football Club. And there's been little moments. Remember last year, Rob, when James Rodriguez was there, Riccardo Ancelotti and Doucouré and Allen, these new players. I'm like, wow, this looks exciting. And the Everton fans are like, and of course, we know tons of them. It's like, well, hang on a minute. We're not going to get too excited because we know what's around the corner. And they were right. So again, I think this is a longer term play for this club to try and find consistent success on the field. That being said, Everton Football Club, looking at my table, down towards Watford and Burnley and Southampton, it's not a good look. And
that's not where they want to be, is it?
Yeah, and the Merseyside derby, I asked Tim Howard, because Tim, of course, the Everton legend, I said, what is kind of unacceptable for them in the derby? And he said, well, first of all, it's a given that you give absolutely everything, that you bite, fight, scrap for every single loose ball. And because I love this game. I love this game.
It's such
a great game. An iconic game in English football. Reds against Blues. You know, two teams of one great city. So that's the minimum that we've got to expect the weekend, Rob. Of course, we'll see the games. Everton have to give Liverpool a game because Liverpool are in such great form. They could blow them away.
Yeah. And blowing away, I think, is a worry for Rafa and the Everton fans, because we've seen with Liverpool, was it four last week against Arsenal, four this week against Southampton? You know, could easily go to Goodison Park and put four past the defence that's not been in good shape. So, yeah, we'll see how Rafa and Everton go on that one. Just moving on, a couple of more results from the weekend. Norwich 0, Wolves 0. So, a point for Dean Smith on this one after getting his victory last weekend. So, a little bit of form, catching up a little bit with the team against, you know, a Wolves team that were in decent nick themselves. Saw a bit of this game. Jose Sol came up with a couple of good saves, actually, for Wolves. The goalkeeper that denied Norwich getting another 3 points. So I'm sure Dean Smith will be pretty happy with things so far. He's gone down. Looks like he's made an impression. Looks like he's got the players on side now. Billy Gilmore, again, I saw was heavily involved in some of the best work that Norwich did. So, yeah, encouraging times, I think, for Dean Smith and Norwich.
Yeah, same as you, Rob. I saw the highlights. I saw some of the game. I saw Max Ahrens go through with a brilliant chance to score. I saw Tim Opuka go through and should have done better. That was close to winning the game there, Rob. Mm. Another 3 points for Norwich, if they had won that game, brings them up to 11, really within striking distance with the Leeds and the Watford teams like that. For a team that I think most people thought, they just haven't got enough quality. Dean Smith's made an impact. You know, that's a win and a draw. And this game really, really, really could have been 3 points for them and more 3 points against a good Wolves team. So, yep, well done. But I think an opportunity lost, given the way they played and the chances they created. Not a ton of them, but one really, really great chance. Shame.
One more game, mate, where I have to say, I watch this game and obviously we're both into, you know, the different personalities, different coaches, different ways of working. We both have talked very highly of Graham Potter and the work he's done at Brighton over the last 18 months to get Brighton where they are, sitting eighth on the table. We've talked to Marcelo Bielsa, certainly last season, you know, what Leeds brought to the Premier League and what an introduction they've been. Not quite got off to the races this year and sit just above the relegation zone now, just 3 points above that bottom three. But it was one of those head scratches, Rob, where at the end of the game, I couldn't quite believe I was hearing boos from Brighton fans after a 0-0 draw with Leeds, based on everything we've seen. A Brighton team that now sit level on points with Manchester United and they're getting booed. I just couldn't get my head around that. And then from Leeds' point of view, Rob, I'm scratching my head a little bit saying, where are that Leeds we saw last year? Like, it doesn't seem to be there at the moment.
Is it too simplistic? And I'll get back to Graham Potter. Mm. Is it too simplistic? And again, we had a chat about this. I chatted with Tim Howard about this. Like, is there a cumulative effect of unbelievable demands put upon you from your manager in terms of basically running, like work and demanded and stuff? Not just the Premier League last year, which are incredible given the numbers and stats that they produced, but even seasons before that. Is that too simplistic, Rob, or is it the missing players, Patrick Bamford and Luke Ayling that are still out, or is it a combination?
I think it's a combination of some. It was interesting. So this game, Brighton dominated possession, played great football, had good chances. Mopay
missed a lot of chances.
And you're kind of thinking, Brighton had a centre forward call, where would they be? And then you think, well, Leeds are saying if they had their centre forward Bamford, and obviously Ayling's another myth for the back, but everything feels like, if Bamford was playing. But I kind of, as I was watching the game, I was thinking, right now I'd rather have Brighton's disappointment than Leeds' disappointment, because Brighton are playing great football. Their expected goals are way up there. They've just got to find a better concentration, or at some point go and find an Ivan Toney or one of those who can turn some of those chances into goals, because then we're talking about a team that could seriously be top eight, challenging top six with their possession and the way they play. From Leeds' point of view, Rob, I'm a little bit scratching my head because there's a few bits that aren't working. And I was kind of went back to my thought last season when a few Leeds fans came and criticised me, and I sort of said about the defending, and he's got to tweak it a little bit. He can't just keep saying, like, this is how we are. Because I said, this is Premier League and he's conceding goals, and people say, well, this is Bielsa, this is the way he's going to play. Well, that's okay until you're not playing so well. And then now some of those tweaks are important that your team are playing, because they've lost their intensity. Their possession's not anywhere near as good as it was. No. Players are playing, you know, I'm seeing more of Jack Harrison running back chasing fullbacks like Lamptey than I am seeing him go past people, Rob. And again, I don't know if that becomes a mindset. Is it a physical or mental tiredness that comes because of, I'm here again, I've got to go up and down again. You know, do the miles on the clock start to add up? I shouldn't think so of somebody that young, 25 years of age at the start, at the peak of his career. Yeah. I used to think in those days, you feel like you can run all day. Mm. Maybe one or two were working out. All I could say is, as I was thinking about it, back in the day, my Wimbledon team that you'd know how we used to work and we used to play. We're going to get it up, we're going to get it wide, we're going to get it in the box. After a while, some people start to work that out and say, okay, we're going to play centre-backs as full-backs, so they're not going to ping those balls out wide. We're going to defend the box better, so they're not going to win those headers. I'm wondering if there's a bit of, okay, we know what Leeds are going to do flying forward and bringing bodies. But on the other end, can we take our fullbacks further? You know, what's going to happen to those wide players? You know, can we drag those centre-backs on the man-to-man and get holes down the middle of the pitch? I'm just thinking, is there things that Leeds maybe have to start to think of? As great as Bielsa is, and listen, I'm a Bielsa fan, believe you me, but this Premier League challenges you, Rob. If you're Pep Guardiola or if you're Marcelo Bielsa, you have to adapt to this league.
I agree in some of that. I still believe that it would be dangerous for Bielsa to abandon what they're great at and to go zonal, as a zonal back four, and to go two banks of four, and to go more traditional.
Yeah,
to be fair, nearly every other team in
English. That's too far the other way. But is there something a little in between, Rob? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Calvin Phillips is a really interesting one because I saw the game. I was watching the game. For one, he didn't look fit. He was hobbling during the first half, and then it was a knock he got. I know he'd had this head incident. Two, he looked at his body language looked like he was unhappy in himself. His body language wasn't good, Rob. Now, I don't know if that's because he's playing centre-back in a three, that he wants to play more in midfield, or I don't know. And I can only look at players like you. I've played with teammates and I've seen them and I know he ain't in a good mood today. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. I don't know what it was. Yeah. But Calvin Phillips had one of those days on him and he came off at half-time. We'll yet to see whether it was tactical or injury. Yeah. But again, that's just a little example of a key player who was brilliant last season. Hasn't quite got going at all this year.
To be fair, I thought Leeds were better in the second half. Rob made a couple of substitutions. Pascal Strout came on.
Yeah.
And Phillips' role as he went out. They're a little bit better and a little bit more like it. But I think you're spot on. I think Jack Harrison is nowhere near the same production. Other players, well, Matthias Cook
hasn't
been the same.
James hasn't really got one goal
in the Premier League, I think, for Leeds.
Yeah.
Last time out, I believe it was. So, yeah, work to do for Leeds United. Just quickly back on that. I mean, Graham Potter, he's almost laughing to himself and shaking his head at the crowd. Really? Like, we did everything right apart from put the ball back in there. And by the way, sneaky, underappreciated that I almost went for. Just Vardy, I just had a love in when I saw Vardy's goals again. Like, God, this guy. Ilan Melier, the goalkeeper, he made a couple of fingertip saves onto the post.
He made
two or three really great saves for Leeds United. So it could have been worse for them. This young goalkeeper, I think, is going to be really, really good. So just a shout out to Melier. But no, Brighton are doing very, very good.
Yeah.
And Leeds, it's a worry. 17th right now, just 3 points from the drop zone with teams like Burnley, particularly Burnley. Above them.
They'll get wins, won't they? Yeah,
then they'll get wins at some point and could put Leeds in trouble. So, yeah, plenty of work to do for Leeds United.
Yeah, plenty of work to do indeed. It's a good weekend, my friend, where Manchester United went to Leeds Chelsea. Gave them plenty to think about in a good 1-1 draw. Elsewhere, Man City survived in the snow. Liverpool shone at Anfield. We're going to be back on Thursday. That's December the 2nd after the midweek fixtures. On match day 14, that sees both the Merseyside Derby on Wednesday, and I think possibly Ralph Rangnick's first game in charge if things go to plan of Manchester United. They're at home to Arsenal on Thursday. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe and stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.